What's going on? We're back with another episode of the Half Cast podcast with my new New Zealand correspondent, Kai Kara France, the mini Tai Tui Vasa. But we've got a special episode today. We've got Dan Hooker with us. And also, we told you we're going to start doing something with our 15 Minutes of Fame, bringing some of the... He's not up and comer. He's been in the game a long time.
Up and comer.
He's just a young buck.
Young Cobb coming through. We've got the big Cobb with us, so we'll just be going with the flow, go with this episode, and thank you boys for coming in. So
thank you boys.
Dan,
too easy, lads. I've been waiting for this podcast. Has been around for half a decade and they finally have me on. Hey, you're finally
late than never.
Finally run out of motherfuckers and I finally get the call up, so I appreciate it. Boys, 5 years in the making.
Ty said he didn't want you on since you had the fight last year. We'll give that story. Give the story of Ty. Got into it in
a bit of a cuddle.
Little wrestle.
That's all it was.
You know, Dan likes fighting.
I was an educated guess. He was 5 days into a bender. I was like, oh. I was only on the first night. I was like, nah, I reckon he's hollow. I reckon he's just a shell. It's an educated guess.
Yeah, nah, I like that. How have you been, Rob? What have you been up to?
Just a whole lot of nothing, I guess. Just resting up. Try to get back to the gym, pop my head in when I can, just to keep up with what everyone's doing. But just letting the body recover. I've been through too many wars to rush back too quick. Like, you just go off feel. Like, you're just sitting at home and then you start getting itchy and you start wanting to come back to the gym. But like, went and kicked the bag and feet are still smashed. I was like, oh yeah, nah, body's not quite there yet. Yeah. So probably get back into it, start getting my fat ass up for some runs and stuff next week. But just ease my way back into it. I look forward to cornering Cam Ralston. So he's coming up. He's got the Contender Series early September. So I think me and Mike Angover will be going over with Cam. And so that's like awesome. A cool. I know that I'm familiar with the setup. And I was stuck over there in Vegas for 5 months. We would just be like, oh yeah, we're Contender Series Wednesday, UFC Saturday, every week. Like every week we were just popping our heads in, sneaking into the VIP and just
Vegas 3 days is enough for me. So
we just stayed off, like when I was there for that period of time, we just stay off the strip. Like it's actually quite cool when we're out but further back, like getting invited to the golf clubs and country clubs and stuff like that. So I was actually not the Vegas not the Vegas. 5 months no strip. It was not. It's not a bad place.
Mad.
I've been seeing you've become addicted to the ink now.
Fall into it. Got my chest up.
Show us the chest piece. Get it out.
You want to get it out?
Show us, brother. It's fresh.
Is it what? Yesterday?
What's that? Two days. Yesterday.
I got it yesterday.
That's raw still.
Yeah. She's a bit red.
Ooh.
That neck? That was alright. Oh, this is probably the worst. Right, like, you get it right on your sternum, that's about right. I don't actually mind it now. Like, you get... You get used to it. Like, there's some parts that are actually not too bad. Like, you're quite... you can just say now. I feel like you gotta feel it. Like, you gotta just take it. You gotta earn it, what I mean? You know how you just scroll on Instagram? People are going, they're getting full knocked out now. That. They're getting
anesthetic and
full knocked out. Like, four or five people just doing a whole back piece. And I'll be like, wake up feeling like such a soft cunt. I'll be like, fuck that. Like, you didn't earn it, you know? Well, I got a couple more in the pipeline, but we'll knock those out of the way. And then, it was actually my missus got a big leg piece.
Mm.
And then, because I was like, I had something already scheduled in a couple of weeks. And then my missus came home with just a big leg piece, and I was like, oh. And then this was Chris Armosa, who did this. He runs his own shop out Avondale, and I've followed him for years because I used to train him for his brother. So I was like, everyone I've got tattoos off is like someone I know, like they're like a friend of mine or someone I've known for like ages. And then I was just scrolling Facebook or Instagram in the morning, and then he goes like, oh, I had someone fall out if anyone's keen. And I go, yeah, bro, I'm keen. Like, so it was that morning. I messaged him like 9 o'clock Wednesday morning, messaged back at 10, like, oh, true. He goes, what do you want? I said, what do you got? I go, what do you got? He goes, oh, I said, oh, we'll do a chess piece. He goes, a chess piece? And he goes, I only really got like dark shit. And I was like, yeah, sweet.
That's me.
He goes, sweet. I go, dark shit. I go, sweet. And he goes, horns or skulls? I go, skulls. And he goes, guns or swords? Swords. So that's the thing, everyone's asking you like, oh, what's that mean? It's like, bro, okay, what do you think it means? Yeah. And whatever they say, I go, yeah. Okay, how'd you get this first pick? But nah, it's just I just like getting them. Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the sorest part you've had so far though?
I'd say like anything like your feet and your ankles is just like anywhere where it's just bone and skin. So you're like feet and your ankles. But the sternum was just like, because most of it you just relax and can like just go through it. But the sternum was just like the whole time. It's good. It's like not like the patch where it hurts is like not that big. So it's like, it was only there for like a little bit. So I'd say like on a whole, like your feet and your ankles, just because like it's a lot of space to cover. And there's like a lot of space where you're sitting there just going, fucking leave my feet alone, bro. But, and then nothing you can do about it. You can't do anything about skin and bone. Like there's no avoiding the pain. Like you just have to sit through it.
My back was pretty outrageous. That I had two guys going on my back.
Two at once.
Two pause. I'm Josh Kuno and one of my other mates to our
Fuck, I just clicked over. Oh man. Two guys on my back. Fuck, am I at the right podcast? You know?
But that was one thing I noticed when there was two tattooists, you know, like you can sort of figure out where you've got, like trying to avoid the, not avoid the pain, but like where you're sending your energy, if that makes sense. Like, you know, where you can sort of, but when there's two people, it's just like, it's bro. Just, but yeah,
it's pretty mad.
Breathing yeah.
What do you reckon the biggest change is in yourself from your younger fighting days to now?
That's a big question.
Oh, no, there's take your time. No.
There's a lot to process. I'd say it's just a lot of small things, like over time, like a lot of small adjustments. I'd say recently it's just like a lot of mental stuff, like you kind of work through. Let's say, like, I know you guys do like the breathing and stuff like that, but it was like I feel like mine were like mentally like deeper than that, like the problems. Like that's the, like, I understand like the breathing and it's great and I think it's like incredible, and that's like dealing with like the physical response of panicking. Like that's once you start to panic, like how to get that under control. But I feel like it was like going even deeper and searching into like why you even panicking in the first place, because it's funny that like from the outside looking, like I know what's going on, like when I just lose my shit and I just try to take someone's head off, like in reality, like people go, oh no, he's just getting in there for a scrap, but mentally going through it, it's like, nah, you're just panicking about losing. Like you don't want to lose, so you're trying to get the other guy out of there. So you're just like sliding all your chips over, and it's like, yeah, there was like a lot to process, as well as you had to overcome and like figure out that I was like, fuck, why do I keep getting in, like dig myself a hole? You know what I mean? And it's like you had to overcome that. I had figured out that I like to fight more than I like to win. Like there's like, oh, there's the easy road, and then I'm just like, oh fuck it, like just chuck a stick of my own riding a bike down the road, and I'm like, and I can see the finish line, and I'm like, oh fuck, this is easy, like cane yourself off the bike. So it's just like, yeah, like mentally just processing a lot of stuff.
Did you work out that on your own?
Like a bit of both. There's like a lot of stuff I figured out, but I worked with like a guy I used to train with at City, David Eagle. Like he just kind of would say things over the years, like put it into my head, and then we just go and catch up like once a week and just like process it. And I'd say like that's the biggest thing, is like a mental, like in like the mental shift and mental understanding. Is like I would say what I say, and then he would give me like, just he'd break it down and kind of give me like a system on how to oh, this is why you're doing this, like, and give me like a process or a system to like work through it.
We had a special guest at our gym today, Carl Weber, coach. My first ever coach in martial arts. That was my introduction into the sport. I know he's played a big part in your career and who you are. What's the impact like being with him in your corner?
Him's like, having Carl in your corner is like you instantly like stop having to like act tough. When you're there, when you're at weigh-ins and stuff like that, like when you're out there on your own, like you kind of feel a bit tense in that. But then you have like Carl Weber standing behind you, like big angry dude, bald, like covered in tats, like just standing there. You're like, oh, I don't even have to look tough. He's just over your shoulder, like he's over your shoulder, like already doing like the intimidation thing. So yeah. You're like, most of my career, like you're just not worried about intimidating the other bloke because you got this guy behind you, like saying, oh, fuck this guy. Standing in your corner like, ah, what are you going to do now? You're getting head smashed in. Like, we had a funny fight I had. It was like one of the last fights before I got in the UFC. I fought in Australia, AFC. And usually I was used to going over there and getting booed when you're flying over, fighting like the hometown dude. And I was fought a dude, Banjo Patterson. But he said in the lead up to the fight, he goes, Dan Hooker's going to hit me with his best shot and I'm going to smile at him. That's like what you're saying, yeah. Leading into it. And then like first round, I was like, I just used to wear people out of my face. Like I go forward and just wear them down. This is my old tactic of like going forward and they'd be like, no. I come back after the first round and Carl goes, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, nah, he's getting tired. He's like, yeah, all right, do your thing. And then like he actually started like getting worn out, and then he's like throwing punches, and then I'm coming back with punches and I could feel him like starting to fade. He was moving against the ropes and I just cracked him, and I just like, the crowd's quiet because I'm starting to win and the hometown boy's starting to lose. I cracked him with like a right hand or something, and I just hear Carl in like a quiet arena go, smile now, cunt. And he did, like he knew, like he looked over in the corner, like smiled, and he was like kind of, I think he went up to Carl after, he's like, nah, who your beer for that one, bro.
has that dog always been in you, or have you honed that?
Is
that,
nah, I always like to fight.
Yeah,
like, that was I don't know, that's natural. Like,
is it a part of you, you reckon, or is that like a kid? Does it come like just fighting as a kid, or is it like?
Well, I always had fights growing up, but yeah. I guess like, fuck, it's Auckland, man. Like, you don't get everyone's. You'll be hard pressed to find a kid that didn't get the fights growing up. Like, everyone was kind of like, oh yeah, I got in a fight when I was younger, but like everyone I was hanging out with was.
Yeah,
was I can smash this dude, like that's all we would talk about. Like,
yeah, I only ask because there's like a couple key memories that I have with you as well that like I think to like the mentality of what you have is like one was we had Spider, and I think you went to Sprawl or something and you broke your hand like the first round, and it was like, instead of going, oh, I broke my hand or something, you just put on the glove and started doing Spider with the glove on and just finished Spider. It's like, that's not only a dog, that's like a mentality thing, that there's no quit. Like, there's not even a thought of quit. You're just into the next.
Yeah, that was like a funny one, because that was the first time I was like matched with Jalen. That's just funny. How, it's like the bigger story, like how it all played out. Because, yeah, it was the first round. I just framed on Karen Schaaf for a takedown. I just framed my arm out. Like, it was first takedown on the wall. Fingers went back, and I was just like, that's cooked, you know. I knew when I had a guillotine, I went to grab the other hand and it was like completely numb. Like, I've broken my hand before. I was like, ah, fuck, I know. Like, you try to lie to yourself, but yeah, like got to the end of Spider or whatever, Tenzhao was broken or whatever. But it's just funny. And then the first round of the actual fight, like I kind of know the moment. I come in, he throws a kick, and like I collect the knee with my forearm.
Mm.
And it wasn't until like the first round finishes and second round's about to start, and I just, there's like the camera pans to me just as around, and I go like this. As I look at my arm, I go, that's not right. Like, so it's like, it's funny how it like happened in the first, and I feel like if I would have done that in Spider, if I would have broken my hand and gone like, huge, my hand's sore, like, I don't think I need to keep going now. Like, I would have done the same shit in the fight. Yep. Like, I would have started to looking for a way out. So I guess it is like never crossed my mind, but I feel like that's like, I never critique people for having, like, when everyone was given the last guy, the knee bar guy for Madison Square Garden, everyone's booing him, and then everyone's just talking shit about him after the fight, going like, oh, why didn't he just get up and fight, you know, why didn't he just come in? And I was like, bro, because he would have got his head crushed in, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not going to sit here and knock this kid for having a shred of self-preservation. Like, his distance was fucked. Like, if he would have come in, and I would have just rocked him. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, yeah. Because I would have got up and gone like, oh, well, fuck, I'm losing this fight. Like, gone forward again, your face smashed off.
Yeah.
And then have to sit out for 6 months. It's like, I'm not going to sit here and give this kid shit for having more brain cells than me. Like, that's... a smart kid, keep doing that. Like, you will live. You are going to live longer than I am going to live.
A couple years off the line.
So is that a part of the game plan? Eating one of Jalen's head kicks, or?
Well, no. Actually, it's funny because I saw the fucking thing. Like, I saw him kick, and I was like expecting my body to do this. Like, I was expecting my arms to go like this. He's going to high kick.
Yeah.
And I was expecting my body to do this, but my arm was like already trashed. So I think my arm just looked at my face and goes, nah, bro. He goes, fuck you, eat it. Because he was like, and then I was thinking after, I was like, because I saw it and I was like, whack. And then I was like, fuck. And then I looked at him and there was three of them. And I go, no, okay. The one on the left. And I grabbed the one on the left and I was like, oh, I got the right one. It was a 1 out of 3 chance. But I was like, look at my arm. I was like, you're already broken. And I was like, why don't you take the kick, mate? Yeah. And he's just like, nah, fuck you, you take it.
Was there anything unexpected about him? Like, was he faster than you expected, or was he longer?
Nah, like, I knew he comes out hard. Like, he comes out and he's like very, like, he just hits hard early. Like, he's a big cat. Yeah, like, with the weight miss and everything, I don't think he breaks my arm with the extra kilo and a half. Like, that's the piss off about it, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have to sit out as long if you didn't miss weight, you know? I feel like he weighs in 70 kilos, like, he doesn't have that extra kilo. I don't think he breaks my arm, so it's like, that's like a bit of a piss off, but it is what it is at this point.
Was it your mandible as well?
I don't know what the fuck that's called, but the tetris meridius. Nah, yeah, like, that's in place. I've had surgery on the other side. It's like a pretty trippy surgery. You got like a scar over here, they just like cut in the side of your head, and the way they explain it is they just slide like a crowbar in there, and they just
jam it.
they get the crowbar and just jam your thing back into place. But it's always already set. Yeah. It was just after this fight. It was because I had that. This is why I stayed in Vegas and got the surgery, because when I did that, and I like this part of my face was like sunken in, they said, oh, you want to stay in Vegas and get the surgery? You want to fly home? I said, nah, I just want to get home. Got home, arrived back in New Zealand, public healthcare system. It's great. Arrived back in New Zealand and it was Christmas. So they were like, oh, every surgeon in the country's
on holiday
for 5 weeks. And I go, oh, mean. So then I like waited like a month with just having a hole in my face. And then after the month, I would like, you just have to, they said, just show up to the hospital at 7 a.m. and then like, just wait to see if you,
someone comes
bro,
in.
4 days, like 4 days I show up at like 7 a.m. and then it gets to like 2 p.m. and they go, oh no, no, you're not going to get in today. So I was like, on the fourth day, I got to and they were like, yeah, no, you're going to have a surgery today. It was just, yeah, it was just, after that, I go, all right, next time I'm just going to stay in Vegas.
Yeah.
And smash it out and get it done. So they go like, man, the UFC just set everything up. I just stayed in for extra like half a week.
Yeah.
Got the surgery on my arm, smacked it together, and then take care of it, you know? I was like, fuck, I'm not coming back here. And it's cool. Like, it's public health is cool, but not when you have to wait in line like everyone else. Yeah. So then it's then it sucks.
Have you ever thought about doing the like stem cells and stuff like that?
I don't know about this way over my head, bro. No,
just
I don't know, bro. I don't know. Just wait till it's sweet. I don't know.
It's over my head as well. I don't know much about it.
Israel, I know Israel's got it a few times. He gets the stem cells shot in for it. Yeah, 10 grand, I'll probably just wait. I'll just wait till it's sweet.
I know it's closed down now, but with coaching, how was that for you? Was that something you think you'd look at to do? You had, was it at the academy?
Yeah. Oh man, that was like that's an incredible experience. Like that's just at the time, like I had a business partner. He says, man, I'll you know, we'll put this all together, and like it kind of, we just ran with it. And it got to the point where it's just like you're stuck between two places. Like it would have been the exact same spot like Huge was in all those years ago, where he had the gym, but he had his own career and he had like all these people that are like depending on you for like, you can't, it's not it's just not a sport you can coach 50%, fight 50%. Like it's a sport that requires 100% of your attention. So then it's like, then I'm like missing this time here away from fight, like time I should be investing in my fighters, and then over here time I should be investing in my career. So it just came to a crux where I had to just bite the bullet and spend the rest of my career just focusing on just being a fighter and stuff like that. And it's been cool. Like a lot of people from the academy have just made the transition. Like I was standing at wrestling one night and I was counted like 15 guys from like Combat Academy were at Andre's wrestling class, and I was like, that's like, we're all standing in a crew. I was like, man, this is this is cool. Like a lot of the fighters come over, Trent and Caleb and Aaron, and
that's why I asked as well, because it's interesting, like some of the guys that you see that have come from your school have that similar mindset to what you have. And do you think that was something that people were just attracted to, that mindset, or was it something that you taught, like this, you expected them to have that in your school?
That's like, so you can't teach, like,
yeah,
you can't teach people to be a fucking idiot.
On natural.
You can't, but you can see it. Like you can see it in other people. Yep. And like those are the people I like to coach, because like those are the people that this sport is like genuinely geared for. Like when Aaron come over and he come over from Australia and he did like my first like mentorship, I could like see it in him. And he's the kind of idiot like me. Like he's in more danger, he's more harm to himself outside of a fight camp. And if like people go, oh, you know, like, oh, fighting's pretty dangerous. It's like, bro, you should see us on the weekend. Like, you should see us when we don't have a fight. Like, he's diving off. He's doing the diving off, going head first in the tables and shit. And you're like, he's getting more concussed outside of the ring than in the ring.
I love it.
This sport for that kind of person is like what it is for. Like, it is to keep us directed, is keep us like improving ourselves,
and that is why we can't have any college programs or anything for the UFC. Hey?
What was your biggest lesson from being a coach and then transitioning back into being a full-time fighter? Like, is there stuff that you've taken on board and kind of used for the rest of your career?
Like more appreciation for my own coaches, like the amount, like it's such a it's a funny sport, it's a funny position, because it's like a super, it's a super, we all know it's like a, the, it's like a super selfish sport. So like anyone that's like successful in mixed martial arts or reaches like a high level is like a selfish person. So it's like, if you have like someone that's like, nah, nah, oh yeah, I'll take this one off, I gotta look after this, or oh nah, oh it's things, oh, I feel bad missing this, like that kind of person is just like not successful. So it's like it's a funny position where you have to be selfish to be successful in the sport. So but then you can't knock a fighter for going out there and being selfish. Like you're coaching these guys, you're investing like a lot of time into them, but then they did like, there's no thank yous, there's no like real, especially guys early on, there's no like real appreciation for the amount of time, the amount of effort, the amount of energy that gets like invested into it. So it was like one thing that I took away from coaching or learned from coaching was like, it's like genuine just respect for the amount of time and amount of energy that gets invested in you from your coaches. So it's just like a deeper appreciation for the amount of time your coach has given to you.
Yeah, one thing I find hard with coaching as well, like you end up caring about these people so much, like when they're going into fights and you have to watch them fight and stuff. I think it's so much harder to watch people fight than actually fighting for me.
Yeah, there's there's a lot of energy as it like gets invested to it. It's not like they go, like a coach goes home and then just like turns his brain off and it's just at the gym. It's like they go home and they're studying film and then they're thinking about it and they're processing it, and there's like that emotional attachment into it, and it's so much deeper than just showing people how to fight. Like that's
I know that like there's a lot of coaches obviously who put a lot of work in, but Huge seems to do a lot more work than a lot of other coaches that I've seen. Like you see him holding pads for an hour for every today, single every single class.
Class
every
finished at what, 10:30, and he's still there at like 4 o'clock. Yeah. Back to back to back, holding pads.
It is. It's like impressive. Like it's got to be.
Just because he's like competed consistently. Yeah, he's had so many fights, like almost 50 fights. He's had fighters pass away in the ring. Like he knows how dangerous this is. Like he knows the danger of it. That's why he invests. Yep. That's why he gives absolutely every ounce of his time into making sure that you're going to be all right, just because he knows better than anyone how dangerous this game is.
Yeah, that was one thing that in Izzy's movie, he said that he wanted to quit after that, after having the death in his arms, but it was that he was the only one that was going to do the best effort for his fighters. Yeah, and it was like, that was pretty...
Like he's saying, like, these guys are still going to fight. I think it was Lolo was the one that said it to him. He goes, like, look, these guys are still going to fight. He goes, who do you want standing in their corner? You want them going to this gym and this coach? Like, these boys are still going to do it. Like, they just love to do it. Yeah, I'm glad he hung around. Like, he saved me a lot of...
saved
me a lot of brain cells.
No, I don't think any of us would be here if it wasn't for you, Jim, right? But when we were doing our stint in Thailand, you were one of my coaches for a lot of that, and the Wild West is like managing yourself when we didn't have Huge, obviously, and like getting your own fights, and they'll be like, sweet, can you come to wherever this is? And you're like, sweet, I'll be there. So I remember me and you like doing a lot of trips around Asia, like... I think we fought in the Philippines, we fought Taiwan, we fought in Indonesia, like half these places.
We got one in Bangtan with the army. It was like, there's two fellas picked us up. Was it
Indonesia?
It was in the Philippines. And it was like out of Manila, Bandan.
Jakarta, just out of Jakarta,
Just out of Jakarta. And then these two fellas picked us up from the airport and they... Like, they didn't speak a lick of English. Like, these dudes, and they were just laughing. Like, we would just be like, oh, yeah, what's... Laughing. And it was like a two-hour drive. They did it in, like, an hour. Like, these boys were just going, like, other side of the motorway, like, off the motorway, like, just cutting around cars. I just shut my eyes and went to sleep. I'm going to die.
This is it. Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel. And then it was like that. And then it was actually, like, a... it was funny, Mike Haskamp, who used to be the promoter of Legends or whatever, he came in to like watch the show. We're at the he ended up it was funny, there was like 25 fights or 26 fights, and he was the main event. We're like getting there and they go, oh, he's fight 26, so he's like, oh, we'll have a feed and go to sleep. And then next thing, they come walking in and they go, oh no, he's next. Okay, the mayor wants to leave, but he wants to watch the main event. So I was like, he went from 26 to like second or third fight of the night. So we're just like, had to wake him up, like, brother, we're up, get up, like, give him a kick, like, wake him up, try to get him warm with a
outrageous
belly full of food.
I had head wraps on. They didn't have any gauze or tape, just head wraps.
Yeah. Wild West, but we're like at the after party, and then Mike Haskam was after them, like, oh yeah, so you guys, because he had a hunch, he's like, you guys have like mafia around here, like, is there like mafia or whatever? They're like, oh, there's no mafia around here. He goes, oh yeah. He goes, who runs like, let's say like the gambling or stuff like that? And they laugh. They go, oh, that's us. We're like, oh yeah, yeah. Like, this is the mafia. Yeah, yeah. I had a hunch.
I remember they all love karaoke, so
yeah.
It doesn't matter like how like hard or like if you're like staunch. Yeah. If you're on the mic, you're gonna kill it.
Yeah, bad.
They're doing karaoke, and then they were doing the karaoke, and then they bring the girls in or whatever, and then we were like, nah. Like me and Kyle were like, nah, we out, bro. We're just gonna go back and crash out.
Yeah.
And they called it.
Real.
Straight up, like they wouldn't take no for an answer. They're like, bro. They're like, grab a girl. I was like, nah. Like, I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And they were just not having it. They were like, bro, like, you gay? Like,
why are you gay?
Yeah, why are you gay? Like, grab one of them. Like, pick any of them. Grab one. And it was like, Mike, who was with us, Mike, like, came in and he goes, like, he explained it to him. He goes, he likes to hunt in the wild. He doesn't like, yay, he like gave them this full caveman's feel. Mike was like, him, a hunter, wild, like, likes to catch them. And then they were like, oh, they were like, yeah, go home. And that was like the only way they let me leave was after like this caveman explanation. Yeah, I was like, man,
that's where it came from.
I was going, man, what the
don't
fuck?
Don't
hunt
what you can't kill, baby.
Yeah, don't hunt what you can't kill, baby.
I won that fight, by the way.
Man, yeah,
I broke my hand first round, but
it's the hand wraps, eh?
Yeah, the hand wraps, right?
No good. What's your most memorable moment of fighting, or most memorable fight, maybe?
Been a couple. I don't know, bro. I don't reckon it's like picking them. Which one of your favorite kids? You know,
biggest moment.
Ah, man. And now, I'd say headlining Auckland.
Mm.
That was pretty cool, bro. That was pretty crazy. That's something I never thought. You know, when I first started, I never even thought that people from New Zealand could get in the UFC. Like, when I thought that was, I never ever made that connection in my head that was like a possibility of ever doing. I thought, you just, oh man, that's big time shit. We can't ever make it there. We're just always gonna have to fight locally forever. Like, so to headline UFC Auckland was like a crazy one. Mm. That was like a crazy one.
Was did you have to take? Like, being such a surreal moment, was it either more pressure before, or even like a bit of a surreal moment afterwards?
Just relief, bro. Like, after the fight, I just actually just lay on the ground. Like, I just, like, he raised my hand and I just went, ah, fuck. And I just lay down on the ground and I just go, ah. And that was just like sheer relief, because like that's like a sold out, that's 10,000 people that, bro, at one stage or another, you would have met or been in the same room as every single like, that's 10,000 people for the rest of your days are gonna see you at the pub and go, oh, remember when you got knocked out in fucking Auckland? Like, that's something you're never gonna live down, you know what I mean? So like, it's just, that was just overwhelmed with like relief. I'm glad that it went to five rounds. I'm glad the fight went how the fight went. Like, that was fucking crazy fight.
Is that photo of you after at the hospital Felder?
Yeah.
What were you guys saying to each other?
Oh, he's just like, get fucked. He's like, bro, like, he showed me the picture of a, there was like a knee that just missed in like the third round, in the first round, I fired a knee and he like just pulled out, like stops, like he's like a picture of my knee like here, and I'm like just pulling out. He's like, now I wish it had landed, so then we wouldn't be wouldn't be sitting here. Like, we both had Rabo for a couple of days. Yeah. Like, that's where your legs are so damaged, or your muscle gets so damaged that your body like
starts breaking down.
Rabdo goes like, I can't repair this. Yeah. I'm just gonna start dumping it. So you actually like, you start pissing out.
Yeah.
You start pissing, and it's like just it's either red or just black.
Yeah.
Like, you're just pissing black, yeah, and it's like
as well. Your body actually starts dumping breaking down.
Oh, hey. I had it like six times. First time I had it, I fought in Australia, and then it was me and Yuja out back in like the green room, and we're like just having a feed or whatever, and then I went out back and I was going to take a piss. I took a piss and it was like a long urinal. There was like three other guys like here, and I was at the end. But I started pissing and it was just red, bro. Like, it was like
right. That's how everyone just looked.
Yeah, and it starts like going down, and everyone just goes like, you just feel them looking. Like, I was like, oh shit.
Beetroot juice.
Yeah, well, I went back to Yuge. I go, bro, does beetroot juice make your piss red? And he goes, I need to get the doctor, don't I? And I was like, yeah, probably. That was the first time. After you know what it is, you're just like, it's for, yeah. After Auckland, they were like, clean piss, clear piss, and then you're off to the after party. I was like, yeah, fuck, there we go, boy. Yeah. Like, let's go. Fucking jazz it. I took the piss and it was just black. Like, I had a cup of black, and I was like, I went out to get Carl to piss in the cup. I was like, Carl. And I go, boat, like, and then the nurse walked in and goes, yeah, you're not going to the after party, mate.
I spoke to the to Paul Felder, and he's a big fan of New Zealand healthcare, because he was in a staying in the hospital for a few days, right? And he said the public healthcare, I think someone was getting arrested, but they needed to get attention or something.
Yeah,
were
yeah.
you there when that happened?
The bro, he was in like a police chase or something like that, and he ended up like wiping his car out. And then the cops like arrested him, whatever. And then he came in with like two police and like a nurse wheeling him in. And he was in the same room as me. He was in the same, he was on the bed opposite me. But he were like, he came in a wheelchair. He was like this when he walked in. And then they wheeled him in and he saw me and he goes, oh, Dan Hooker. And then he just stood up like miracle. Like, he was like handcuffed to the wheelchair. Bro, he just stands up and he goes, bro, can we get a picture? He was like, and he was just like, because he came and wheeled like this. Like, and he just saw me. He goes, Dan Hooker. He goes, bro, let's grab a picture. And just stands up, like, with his arm around me, grabs a picture, and then he sits back on his wheelchair, like, trying to play dead again. But nah, that was, yeah, I was there. That was funny. He was a funny cat.
That's funny.
Another one of my favourite moments when, after the Poirier fight, not the fight, but the when he came over and you just sitting there and then you're like, nah, fuck you, and got back up in his face.
Well, they were like, that was because there's absolutely no crowd. Like, I remember walking out for that fight and it, I was standing there counting, and I was like, I counted for like 15 cameramen. It was like the first, I think I might have been like one of the first ones at the Apex. Mm. If not the first, like the second, yeah, 15 people, cameramen, coaches, commentators, like everyone in the room, 15 people. And then the fight before that was sold out, 11,000 people. You know what I mean? Like, it was just different, like absolutely standing there, absolutely no adrenaline. So I don't think, like, after the fight, I wouldn't have, like, with the adrenaline, I wouldn't have sat down like that.
Yes.
But I sat down like that, and then, because Poirier hadn't said boo, like leading up to the fight, he hadn't said boo. And then he does it to Chandler and stuff like that, like after he wins. Yeah, like, yeah. Then he's like, ah, now it's my time to rub it in, you know.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, just knew I'd lost, you know, upset. And then he starts, you gotta fight this guy next. Yeah. And I was going, motherfucker. just stand up. I was like, fuck, like, you can't live that kind of shit down. And I was like, yeah, forehead to forehead. And then he's like,
good luck.
And it was funny, like, yeah, we got to the hospital and I was like, bro, fuck, what are you up to? Because we were in like the bed next to each other in the hospital, and I was like, fuck, you know what I mean, like, fuck, I ain't gonna get in my face. And he goes, nah. So we're all like, we had a chat at the hospital, we're all good.
Yeah,
he's just like, that's what he like, that's when he kind of just releases, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, when he's, which is like a good way to rub it in. You're like, after you kick the guy's ass, don't talk a bunch of shit. Don't talk a bunch of shit before the fight. Just leave it. And then when you win, unload the cannon. Yeah. Like, get the rubbing it in going. And so I got no, yeah, got no qualms about that. That's, yeah, you get your ass kicked, you got to take it on the chin, bro.
Yeah. What fights are you looking for now? Like, what I know you would never take an easy fight, but like, is there someone or goal wise for fights?
Nah, I think they're all cool fights now. Like, I think standing in the top 10, I've like up or down. Like, there are some pretty cool fights and a cool spot. I got one fight left on my deal. So UFC have to offer me something cool. So it's like a cool spot to be in.
And like, when you say they offer them something cool, is that because if they don't, then you're gonna take something else?
That's
cool.
the game. Like, I've got it. Like, that's like a name you've built in the UFC over the last decade. Like, that's you've like earned that. That's the benefit of the UFC is you get to make a name for yourself. Yep. It's like, you get to make a name for yourself, and then everyone, like, every promotion wants you to fight on their promotion because they look at your fights and they go, oh, people like to watch this guy fight. He fights. Like, he doesn't show up to do anything else but get after it and fight. So it's like, it's just a cool spot to be in.
So let's play devil's advocate. If it wasn't UFC, what would something that you'd look at? Maybe, I know you've mentioned, wouldn't like, I could see in like either the boxing or bare knuckle fighting, maybe like those old
bare knuckle's my retirement plan. That's my over 50 whatever's left, you know. Whatever's left. That's my bare knuckles. My retirement plan. Like, that's a bit of fun. You know what I mean? I'm like someone that's like, you just can't stop. You never, like, it's just like a fire there. It can't stop. Like, I'll be 50. Oh man, someone pulled out a King of the Ring this weekend. I'll just be like, get off. Get off the couch. Like, get off the couch. Like, oh, back in my day, like, that's my dream, you know? Sit at the pub, like, have my own chair. Like, don't sit in that chair. Stand in this chair, bro. He'll smack you over. Like,
how many years do you feel like you have in you?
Heaps. Like, as long as you can physically do it, I guess. Like, been doing it long enough that I've seen it taken away from people in like a moment. Like, you see, like, Dan Hardy's fucking just goes and has a heart scan and they go, nah, you're out, mate. Mm. Or you get something on your brain and then they say, oh, nah, no one will ever sanction you fighting ever again. Or had fighters, even one of my fighters, like a detached retina, and then them just going, mate, you get hit one more time, you'll go blind. Like, so it's... once you've seen it firsthand, just people taken away from it instant, like, you appreciate it. Like, I know your heart can fight forever till the day you die, you know what I mean? But you know your body can give out at any single moment, so you just appreciate every fight, every training session, because you know it's just making the most of it.
Is there anything that you've been looking at or plans outside of your fighting then?
Nah. Like, done it, you know what I mean? Like, done it. It's not as fun. Like, you coming up and then, you know, you have your first kid and you just start absolutely panicking. Like, fuck, I gotta... is not a good way to provide for a child. Like, because you can lose it in any single moment. So you do all of that stuff to oh, man, I'll do this, or maybe I'll like to do this, or set up some businesses, and then just realize, man, I just like fighting people. Like, I don't
100%
don't like doing all of this other bullshit. I just like to really just like the fighting part. But it's like cool, like the reason why I step back from all of that is because you get yourself in a position, like, financially where like, you don't, like, not saying I like live like a king or like can live on like a modest living, which I'm incredibly happy with. Like, I step away from fighting, like, right now I can live my modest life and I don't have to work again for the rest of my days. Like, I guess that's like the change where you're just like, oh, you don't have to do anything for everyone else. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you can get the tattoos now because you're like, well, I'm gonna fuck up their job at the bank. You know, I don't need the job at the bank or whatever. And then Ash is up my ass, like, oh, don't tattoo on your arms or your hands. You know, because I'll get you a nice cushy commentary job. And she's like, I don't want a commentary job. Mm. Like, I don't want to sit and commentate. Like, I don't know what it is about it. Like, it's just to sit back and not like knocking what they do, like DC and like what they kind of do, but just to sit back and like have the earpiece and have like just people that have never had any, like never lost any blood or sweat in a cage, just going, oh, ask him if he's going to retire, or say he should probably retire now, or oh, this guy's over the hill, or this guy, to sit back and just to critique. It's like the same for the moment, like Khabib retires and he sits back like undefeated and he just goes, oh, this guy's shit, this guy's over the hill. It's like, you spend all that time getting an undefeated record just so you could sit back and say, oh, he's shit. Like, sit back and critique everyone still doing it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's just something I don't want to do. Like, I would love to be a part of the sport and like comment on the sport and stuff like that if it was about, oh man, what? How do you think this fight's going to play out? What do you think is going to be the deciding factor? And then go back and like do some like study and actually break down the fight. But no one wants that shit. Like, people just want to be entertained. They don't want to be educated. Like, that's the funny thing about the sport. And it's like, I would stay around and do that, play that position if it was to educate people. But I'm not just going to come in, put a suit on, smile, say whatever they say on the teleprompter and just sit there talking shit about guys that are still out there getting after it. Yeah. Like, that's just not something I'm interested in.
No, I like that. But before we do let you go, Dan, I've been given, seems like you got the swords on your chest, this one from Faction Knives.
Fuck, that'll get me into trouble, brother. Thank you. There's some people that shouldn't have weapons, bro. I'm one of them. But thank you.
Dan Hooker arrested.
There's another one for my missus to hide. Thank you. Half an idiot. What are you going to do?
But yeah, bro, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate your time. I hope nothing but the best, speedy recovery, and see you back in the gym, lad.
See you in another 5 years on the you run out of guests again, man.
We'll make it a reoccurring thing now. But thank you so much for your time, bro. Is there anyone you wanted to shout out or thank?
Nah, we're good.
Are you coming over to Sydney?
Yeah. We're flying after Cam's fight. That's like Wednesday or Thursday or whatever. Straight after that fight, we're flying straight to... We get there on the Saturday. So we get there in time for
Friday's there, man.
Get fucked.
Yeah.
You're on Friday?
Friday night.
Fucking dude. Stitch me up.
Stitch you up, bro.
It's Friday.
Friday night.
Friday there.
I'll have to double check. I'm not happy about this. What, then the UFC is not till Sunday?
Yeah.
So I wonder why they did that.
Eternal, change the date.
They did.
Make it Saturday.
Yeah.
I thought it was Saturday.
I think it was initially, and then but now it's Friday.
Cool. Pack of dogs. Fucking set me up. That's why I never liked the Eternal, bro. Cursed. Your title's cursed. That lightweight title's bloody cursed, eh? I'm out of here before I get myself in trouble now.
Cheers, bro. Thank you.
Go back. See you in the morning.
All right.
Cobber.
The main man. Put the knife away, brother. Thank you for sitting there so patiently. But I thought we'd be able to bring you in somehow, but we just ended up interviewing. But thanks, brother. He's known for his patience.
Cobber.
Good. Yeah, thanks
Rogan Anderson.
Appreciate it.
So we were starting with Brogan for this one. We're going to call it like a 15 minutes of fame, and just starting to bring some of the guys. We have so many top-notch guys at City Kickboxing. Well, obviously just so many guys coming up, and also just high-level athletes that are fighting for titles, fighting in King of the Ring, lots of, and we want to just try and
start bringing some sparring partners. So
yeah,
just want to give them a bit of shine and give them introductions that if people don't know them or follow them, these are the guys to watch for, because these are going to be the big names, the people that are going to be carrying on, I guess, the lineage of this gym. And you know, Cobb is one of the guys that's been in the circle. So when I first started, I know you were still starting a few pro fights and all the way. Where is it, Dunedin or Invercargill?
Yeah, no, I started in Dunedin. Oh, yeah. And started fighting on the Hammerhead shows down there. But yeah, I'm pretty sure like you were fighting on the Supremacy shows maybe even over on Legends. And were you on Legends or was it some of the other boys? Yeah, I remember when I first started, that was like, it's funny what Dan was saying before, like no one believed that you could get to the UFC or anything. That was like the pathway back in the day when I first started. I was like, yeah, nah, it would be mean if like one day I was like the Supremacy champion. Yeah. And then like Legends was like maybe the next realistic target after that, and then once that shut down, then it was like, oh, what now?
Yeah, at one point it was Legends, FC and ONE FC. That was like the big promotions in Asia, and I remember like all the Supremacy title holders, New Zealand's premier show at that time, all of their champs got contracts in Legends. So I was like, oh yeah, that's where you want to be fighting.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell, I get to fight overseas and get paid for it? Like, I didn't even think that was a reality, but it was a great pathway, great exposure to kind of get used to the travel, fight, and then come back home. What got you into martial arts?
I was like pretty scrappy, I guess, growing up. As a teenager, pretty competitive in all aspects of life. And I'd always wanted to get involved in boxing or kickboxing as a teenager, but just never found it in me to just walk into one of the gyms in town, I guess. And then I was just working out at the gym in Mosgiel where I used to just do weights, and that was when Matt Tor and Uppy Tire started up an MMA club there, and that was my first experience. Just walked in on day one when they started and just was super into it right away. We were just doing a bit of kickboxing and a bit of jiu-jitsu, just training a couple of days a week, and then I just wanted more. I just wanted to be doing more, you know. And like back then, we were kind of just like, I guess it was similar in most places in New Zealand. Probably there was like, we love to fight, and like the level of kickboxing coaching and stuff has always been like pretty decent here. We've had a good pedigree of kickboxing for a long time, but a lot of the MMA stuff, this was the same all over the world. Was people were just kind of making it up as they went along, you know, like figuring it out on the fly. And it was much the same down home, and I was just trying to figure it out as fast as I could. Obviously, like there was just the lack of wrestling and stuff down home, so eventually I started looking abroad to try and get as much knowledge as I could possibly in. So I started traveling. I went to Thailand for a little bit. Didn't quite find what I was looking for. Ended up over in the States for a few years, going back and forth. Found like a good team environment, a little kind of over there, and got like good grappling and wrestling coaching in.
Where was this?
This was in Albuquerque at Jackson Wink.
And for people that like obviously don't know the gym, Brogan's arguably one of the strongest and best wrestlers in City Kickboxing. So when he says that he's gone and learned wrestling, he's became like one of the most proficient in City Kickboxing. But I also met you at Jackson's in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
So which was crazy because for us to both end up back at City Kickboxing, it's been a bit of a journey, brother.
Yeah, and it was like I thought what I was getting over there was really good, but then once I came back home and started traveling to City Kickboxing and just being introduced to the striking system there and just how much knowledge there was there and how deep the knowledge was, like even back then, like I wasn't a fantastic striker, but I kind of thought like I had a good grasp on striking, and maybe I just needed to spend more time doing it and refine my tools and get sharper, but like maybe there wasn't like heaps more to like learn. But then as soon as I got there, I was just like, my mind was blown.
Like,
even now, like there's days I turn up and I'm just like, just learned so much more about fighting today than I knew yesterday. It's like, that's amazing to be around, you know. So that's what I've been looking for my whole career, you know. So it's awesome to have found that. And just the team environment here is fantastic, you know. All the boys, the team cohesion is fantastic. Everyone's on the same page. There's no beef. There's no yeah, it's good. It's a good environment.
Were you living at the gym in Albuquerque as well?
Yeah, I stayed in the dorms.
Is that what you've always done? Just travelled and lived at the gyms and like.
I don't mind living pretty simple. I think like the best times in my life have been when I've just been able to just like live at a gym and walk downstairs and train in the morning, get a little bit of rest.
Eat your bags of lettuce.
I love it. The full life of a martial artist, I love it. But is that, it's just always been the journey? Like, did you just tell your, like, were your family ever asked, like, what you're up to? Like, you're just
they're always supportive of me. They know I love doing what I'm doing. But yeah, I had some, like, I guess I had some ties in Dunedin for a while. I was coaching a lot down there. I had like a good group of guys that I was kind of trying to bring up and really enjoyed looking after and coaching. So that was probably the one thing that held me back from kind of like making the move here earlier. But I was justifying like traveling back and forth, spending a few months at a time in the States and then going home and working and coaching there. But I really enjoyed the time where I was just able to like just focus on myself and not have to worry about doing the PTs and stuff and just being able to just live it, just immerse myself in it. And that's what I've actually kind of been able to do again now that I'm up here at City Kickboxing, which is amazing. So I'm still living like I was in my mid-20s with no responsibilities, even though I'm in my 30s now. But no, I still love it. I still enjoy doing it every day. So,
What's been the most challenging thing? I know it's been a frustrating time for you to kind of break through to those bigger promotions and get the call up. What's keeping that fire burning?
Like the last couple of years has been like there's been like a carrot dangling there almost that we thought we were going to get, like thought maybe we were going to get on the Contender Series or thought maybe an opportunity would have popped up elsewhere by now, so we were kind of putting the local fights on hold, but there was always something that I was looking forward to, so that kept me motivated. But it's just my love for the training anyway, like even if I was never going to fight again, I would still be training every day anyway, just because I like doing it. So it's not too hard to get. Obviously, it's harder to get motivated when you're exhausted at the end of the week. But like day in, day out, I'm super grateful just to be able to train every day. I do still enjoy it. I love getting down and around the boys, the banter. There's nothing I'd rather be doing. And I guess even looking back on what I was doing before fighting when I was like 20, when I was working as an electrician, just didn't enjoy it, just didn't enjoy that lifestyle, didn't enjoy the 9-to-5, didn't enjoy anything about it. Once I was actually finally able to do what I really wanted to do, live my life how I wanted to do it, get up, do the thing I love, rest in the arvo, do it again at night time, it's made me like grateful for that even now.
Yeah. And what for your next fight? Coming up pretty close, so pretty soon. It's in Sydney on internal. Can you tell us about your matchup?
Yeah, so I guess it's the best opportunity I could have hoped for on the local circuit here in Australia and New Zealand. Eternal has grown into the biggest promotion in this part of the world. And so when the promoter offered me this spot on the UFC weekend card in Sydney, that was too good to refuse, really. He put me straight in for a middleweight title fight against Matt Myers, who is their current champion. I think he's a guy that's come up pretty fast. He had a good win in his last fight over the previous champion, John Martin Fraser, by spinning back kick, so he's like an exciting prospect. And he was calling for the toughest fights he could find. He wanted me or Cameron Rouston or Kevin Jussay, who, you know, are all formidable opponents. So he's keen as. He's an aggressive, energetic guy who has like a pretty dynamic arsenal of weapons. I'm super excited for it. As I said, like it's probably the best spot I could have hoped for. Hopefully, no matter, well, yeah, I put on a good performance, this is probably the best chance I have of like opening those doors that I've been trying to open up until this point, whether it's, you know, finally getting a chance with the UFC or whether it's getting a shot with one of the other major promotions. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this is what gets me over the line.
So. Yeah, this will be the springboard, right?
Yeah, hopefully. I was hoping, you know, Contender Series might have been a go, but they ended up they didn't really want guys my age. Like, I'm 34 now, so I knew that the age was working against me. Even though, like, I've been waiting, like, I've been in a good position for the last 2 or 3 years, on a 6-fight winning streak, winning like 11 out of my last 12. I'm in a good spot, but just with COVID and stuff, the fights weren't coming over this part of the world, and so a couple of years did tick by, and so I knew that was working against me. So you wasn't able to get the shot on Contender Series, so hopefully this year, with potentially the matchmakers in the house watching the show, could be a chance for me to get noticed. And regardless, it's just going to have a lot of eyes on it, this show, so it'll be good exposure, and if I can put on a good performance, then yeah, hopefully the springboard I need.
Yeah, and I hope nothing but the best for you, because whether it is the UFC or any of these other big promotions, I'm sure you're going to do something great with it. And
I love how we're all fighting that weekend as well, because like we're all in the trenches right now. It's Thursday's a night off, but we're still here.
Talk about trenches. Today has been a long fucking day, bro.
Every morning I see you, brother, walk in, and you're looking just as drained as I am. I'm like, We're in it again, brother.
Today, what's that? It's been four sessions today.
Yeah.
I've been trying to go to the toilet.
I know, bro. I've needed to piss for like 30 minutes. I'm just like, can't get up.
It's been a tough week. But
this is part of the game. Like, this is why I love it. Because I honestly love being in this hurt, brother. I like, as much as it sucks and stuff, I love this just as much as, like, I understand this is the whole part of fighting. I love this hurt. I love being drained. I love seeing all the boys in there hurting together and going, let's go. Like,
it's motivating, because you know all the other guys are turning up as well, and you're like, I don't want to be the one that just, like, I don't want to be the one that taps out and takes the session off today. Yeah. You know, the next time you walk in with the boys, like, where were you? I love that. Like, and that's what I missed, like, at other spots, I guess, was that, like, I've always wanted to train as hard as I could and as much as I could, and wherever else I was the guy that was working harder than the other people. But then I come here and there's people who have, like, even better work ethic than myself again, that are, like, just pushing it. It just makes you want to work even harder, you know. It's incredible.
Because I don't know if you felt the same, but I loved Jackson's, and it was always my dream to go over to Jackson's. I actually got there through Dan Higgins. He was the one that sent me over there. I think it was just a different time when we got there. Like,
it wasn't past, it was just
from what I had been explained, what it was very different when I got there. And I think what I was expecting Jackson's to be ended up being what CKB was.
I thought that Greg Jackson was going to be like the glue that held the place together, and he was going to be leading from the front and was there all the time. And the sessions that he taught were valuable, and he was good and always good to be around.
Yeah.
But he just wasn't there on the coalface day in and day out. And I don't think there was anyone kind of leading the team from the front. And then when I came here and saw the way that Eugene led the team, that's what I thought it was going to be like over there. Yeah. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh, wait, this is what I've been looking for. Somebody who's just, like, putting it in for the boys. He's there all the time, like, turns up before anyone else in the morning, the last to leave at night. Like, yeah, that's I don't know if it was like that more, as you said, before we went there, or whether it had fallen off. I got some great experience over there, and I think, like, the thing that I benefited most was just from guys coming from all over the world, and iron sharpens iron, and there was good sparring and the good grappling coaching and wrestling coaching. I don't think the level of kickboxing over in the United States is anywhere near as good as what we've got here. So
I met some lifelong friends over there, and even the coaches, like, I still talk to some of the coaches, and the people that I met over there was like, it's like everything. Martial arts, man, has just taken me where I'm supposed to be at certain times in my life. And I'm just thankful for the whole journey. But I've always said that I felt like as soon as I got to Kansas City Kickboxing, I realized that this is the final chapter of my MMA career. Not saying when that's going to end, but I can just feel like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be to finish it off.
Yeah.
So I just, like, yeah.
It's pretty cool how it's in, you guys aren't from Auckland, but it's in my backyard, because I had to, like, do full circle as well. It's like, travel overseas, obtain all this knowledge, and then come back home. And then I was like, oh, okay, I don't need to sacrifice friends, family, and all of that I did when I was younger growing up. Because I was like, there wasn't a blueprint of how to, I guess, make a career in mixed martial arts, but then be back home now. It's like, cool. Now everyone can get to me, and, like,
I have a schedule that I want to be on, but then balancing all of that with your training and then family and all of that stuff. So constantly learning, but getting better at it.
How is that with you, with family? Like, being, like, are they, do you go down a lot to see them, or?
Yeah, when I first moved up, I was going down pretty regularly, every couple of months. I've just got my mum and my dad down there, and they've both got different sides of the family. So dad had a new partner and mum had a new partner, and so I've got some siblings on either side. There was a strong pull for me to go back home when I first moved up here, but now I'm like more and more comfortable up here. I know my family are going to be there. My family, we talk, and you know, I get down there a few times a year to catch up with them. I'm only 2 hours away. They can come visit me anytime they want as well. Yeah. So they know that. I'm pretty happy up here for now, and I can see myself spending the rest of my career in Auckland anyway, for sure.
You were talking about you've always had that hard work ethic and finding guys with more work ethic. Where do you get that work ethic from? Was that like instilled in you as a kid? Have you always had it?
No, I don't think I did always have it. I struggled to find, when I'm competitive about something, it brings it out in me. Mm. And so when I played rugby, I was always, you know, I would always turn up to practice. I was into it, you know. But then as my passion waned for that, and even when I was trying to find something for a career and I just didn't know what I wanted to do at the end of school, I fell off at school, wasn't into anything, found it really hard to find myself to get passionate about anything. And then when I finally found mixed martial arts and training, it was that just ignited that passion, and that's what drove my work ethic, I think. It's not hard to get motivated about something you really want to learn more about and you really want to get better at. So yeah, that's where my work ethic came from, I think, was from the passion that I have for MMA. Mm.
I asked Kai last time where he goes to in those dark spots, like say if you're in the hard spot or on the back end of a beating or anything in a bad fight. What, do you have like somewhere where you go, or like there's tools something that you use? That's there's something that you hold on to or drives you?
Yeah, it's probably just the. It's the people around me. There's certain people, you know, at the gym, the ones that that I see working harder than anyone, they're the people that motivate me. Mm. And the people in my life that have believed in me up until this point, that have always sung my praises, and I've heard telling other people that I'm going to do well. Mm. They're the people that I want to validate their belief in me, you know, that I want to make proud. So it's that, you know, like when in my darkest time where I'm exhausted, if I can get a glimpse of one of those faces or the people that believe in me, then that's what kind of picks me up again, you know. Or even sometimes it's one of the boys on the sideline saying, let's go, come on, you know, like that's, as long as it's somebody whom I respect a great deal and whom I see working hard also, then that's all I need, you know.
Yeah, mad.
Yeah, it's cool. What is your prediction to come for Sydney?
Yeah, I think that he's going to come out pretty aggressive.
You said he's a flashy kind of style.
Well, he's like reasonably well-rounded, but he's not super experienced in terms of, I think he's only had maybe 5 or 6 pro fights compared to my 18, and didn't have like a huge amateur career either. So he's made the rise up pretty quick, and he's pretty aggressive. So I think like maybe he hasn't got the experience that I've got. I expect him to come out like pretty aggressive. He'll throw some flashy stuff. He'll try and kick my head off. He'll try a spinning back kick. He'll try his like Anderson Silva up elbow. He might go to the wrestling as well, but I'm just going to be patient for a start. And I think that the longer the fight goes, the better martial artist will show himself over the course. And then once I start to get comfortable, I'll slowly pick the pace up, and I'm hoping to get him out of there. However I may, before the third or fourth round, but I'm more than prepared to go the 25 minutes. I've never gone the 25 minutes before. I think it would be great experience for me to go the 25 minutes. But I really want to knock him out. I really want to try and catch him being super aggressive and make him pay. I'd love to knock him out. That's what I'm looking for.
I'm excited for this one because it's been a while since we've seen you back in the cage. I know a lot of people at our gym are in your similar position, kind of on the cusp of breaking through. Is there any advice you'd want to give to, you know, those contenders coming through, those experienced vets that are trying to break through? Any advice for them?
Yeah, I guess like just try and stay busy. I think there was maybe some years, crucial years, 30 to 32, where I thought I was in a really good position, and I was like, oh, surely they'll pick me up soon. I'll just like, maybe I'll just fight one time this year and just keep active, and then they'll, you know, I've won 4 in a row now, surely they'll pick me up. I've won 5 in a row now, surely they'll pick me up. Yeah. I've won 6 in a row now, surely they'll pick me up. Yeah. Just keep doing it. Just try and stay as busy as you can. Try and just put a streak together, but yeah, don't sit back and think that they're going to come to you, because they're not, you know, like, yeah. And I guess just having the right people in your corner, you got to, there was probably a period of time where I jumped around from a couple of different, managers, and just didn't quite find the right person. And I think I should have just been here with Eugene looking out for me from day one, and, it might've happened for me sooner. So yeah, just making sure you've got the right people in your corner and just staying busy. There's nothing like just fighting regularly. I think that if you're good enough, then that'll show in the results, and you'll get picked up sooner or later.
Awesome, that's great.
Did you want to shout? Do you want to give us any shout outs or anything, brother?
Nah, just to everyone that supports me on this journey. I know there's been, you know, people back home and people here that have wished me well and wish me all the best and want to see me get the opportunity. So, you know, thanks to those that have believed in me for as long as you have, and thanks for sticking with me.
Oh, man, thank you so much for coming on, bro. I know it's been a long day. I appreciate you coming on, man. And I can't wait to see you go to work on September, get that win. And also I want to see you get picked up on one of these big promotions, bro. So I hope nothing but the best for you, and let's get back to work, eh?
Hey, appreciate you, boys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother, so much.